Okay, the first class is online, YUTorah.org. Today we will discuss, as a continuation of our last presentation, which was basically trying to answer the question, what happened about the year 1000? This is when this starts to appear, what I'm about to describe. Is there this movement to interpret the Bible with pshat? Because until then, Jews were satisfied to interpret the Bible with drash. Okay? In order to... Because until then, Jews were satisfied to learn the Bible from whatever was available to them. The Gemaras, two Talmuds, Bavli, Rishonli. And if all you get to understand the Bible is by reading the Talmud, you're not getting pshat. Okay? You're getting good perushim altogether. It's not going to stay within the realm of pshat. It's not going to be interested in staying within the realm of pshat. And you're going to say, what does pshat even mean? So we gave it a definition last time. Lahavshit an animal means to skin an animal. Just take the skin level. Remember last class I gave you some examples from humor and advertisements, what a word means, right? This is very much in the world now, in America now, with respect to the U.S. Constitution, right? What's the plain understanding of the founders, of the framers, of the authors of the Constitution? Right? As opposed to drash, which means to dig deeper. For that. This must have cost something somewhere?
No.
So you give it to Stucker, please.
Okay. It was on my calf card.
Thank you. I had three daughters who went here, and they all came home at the end of each semester with all this kind of... always ends up on your card. Okay, so that we get less time with two different presentations for why this happened about the year 1000. If you recall, one was internal, one was external. Okay, the internal had to do with getting shot in the Gemaras. So that just we fetch from that to get pshat in the Bible. How do we know that Jews about the year 1000 started to want to get pshat in the Gemara? Remember the example I gave? The historical data I gave last week, was from the Cairo, Geniza. Remember that Geniza where they found millions of pages of responsa and kind of correspondences from people to their rabbinic scholars and... Right, so we saw that around this time, we don't have an explanation for this per se, but around this time, there was a movement to get pshat, to explain the Gemara. Rashi was an offshoot of that. Okay, until then, what did you want from your page of Gemara? I'm opening a Gemara. What do I want to get out of this? There's some Hebrew words here. It's not a difficult question. What?
What's the halacha?
What am I supposed to do? Right? And someone should give me an answer right away. I don't want him to have to say sometimes, well, I'll get back to you on that. Right? Okay, sometimes you have to have the answer right away. Okay? So that was, since the Gemara was finished, what people wanted from the Gemara. All of a sudden, people wanted something else from the Gemara, which is... What does it mean? How can I learn it? Right? How can I interpret it? That needed pshat. No one ever says, give me the drash of the Gemara. I want the pshat in the Gemara. Right? Okay? Right, that's the internal reason. I'm just reviewing now. The external reason, remember, had to do with... Please tell me that you remember this. The external... What? The four building blocks of pshat emerged from what external factor? What was happening to the Jews in the year 1000 that made Jews say, you know what? I should pursue the pshat of this text. Their religion was being questioned by the Christians who felt that Jesus is coming for the second time in the year 1000. Right? It's a Christian theology that every millennia the world is especially ripe for his second coming. Right? Not that there's anything like that in anything he said. He said, my kingdom come and you shall see it. But okay, I'm not going to argue with a major religion here. So when Jews were forced into arguing over whether, let's say, Psalms 22, Mamnatzeach Ayelet HaShachar, I don't suspect that anybody here is steeped in Christian theology, but Psalms 22, according to Christians, is a detailed list of the crucifixion of Jesus. And Jews were forced into the disputations to argue that point. So what is a Jew's best argument about that? Not the pshat. That's not the pshat. That's not what we're talking about here. Alright? Okay? You'd be amazed if you read through, I've taken for courses and polemics, what Christians were arguing against Jews to convince them that you should become Christians. Right? There is one of the verses in chapter 22 of Tehillim is, my arms and legs were pinned down like a lion. Well, how does a lion get his arms and legs pinned down? Because four or five jackals can actually take out a lion if each one is holding down another limb. Another one rips at his heart. So they pinned down my arms and legs ka'ari, like a lion. So Christians tried to convince the Jews, pin down my arms, right? Pierce, they said it. Kari in Greek is an X. Turn an X on its side, and it's going to look like a cross. So a Jew is confronted with that. Said, that's why you want me to convert? It's not the pshat. Following? And remember, if this ever shows up in an argument, remember my baseball and football imagery. If you want to change a call on the field, right? Remember what I said with that?
Yeah, you have to zoom in. Yeah, it's a higher standard.
It's higher standard of evidence than the original call. You get what I'm saying? You want to say the umpire said it's a home run, and now you want to change it and say, no, it was a foul ball. You better have overwhelming evidence to change the call. So if you want to change Judaism and say now it took a detour, that we believe that God put himself in the body of a woman and was born of a virgin, and then he's supposed to save us from the Greeks, from the Romans, and you want us to believe and buy into that, right? It better be very convincing. Right? So when Jews had to argue these points, right, the best argument they could give was that you want to prove that this proved Jesus from Yirmiyahu, from Yeshayahu, from... It's not the pshat. Okay? Remember I gave one example last week. Remember that example? The virgin giving birth to a boy that's going to save us. So we saw four different reasons why Jews would argue about that. One, I'm going to write the fancy English words, all right? One was philology. Look in your nose. Tell me what that was. What argument was that? Please, yes?
So it's the meaning of the word?
Meaning of the word. This is an Alma that's giving birth to this boy that's going to save us. Right? You're wrong about the Hebrew word. Right? The Christians have a Greek translation of the Bible that read the Greek word for Pesula. But that's not the original Hebrew word that Yeshayahu spoke. So philology, if you want to get the pshat, you get the word right. If you have free reign to explain anything you want, then... how are you reading? You can believe any theology you want, but don't tie it to this pasuk that's not saying that. Following? The next one was grammar. The verse says that she is pregnant. Jesus wasn't born for another 600 years after that prophecy. Got it? Remember, you said this one. Context. Remember? Context. The prophecy begins with the word hine. Behold, you're going to see it now. The threat to the Jews at the time this prophecy was given was from Ashur. This child, whoever it is supposed to save us from Ashur, not from the Romans. And parenthetically, if you wanted to get snarky, yeah, what would you say? The boy in this prophecy is supposed to save us from the enemy. No, finish.
Not be the enemy.
Jesus did not save us. The Romans had their way with him. One Jew actually said that snarky answer, they killed him on the spot. The Jews were forced into these disputations with such burdensome rules. They didn't want to do it. They were forced into it. Right? You couldn't be blasphemous. You couldn't be disrespectful. And the Jews said, of course this can't be Jesus. This child is supposed to save us. He did not save us. Right? And remember, the last one is reality. Pshat has to still conform to reality. Virgins don't give birth. Okay? These are the four building blocks of Pshat. Rashi did not make them up. Rashi was a product of it. Okay, clear? All right, let's go to the next step. What did Rashi have in front of him to use to write his Perush? I start with Rashi because he's the Bechor of all Mefarshim. Okay? Remember, I told you that Sa'at Yigong was 100 years before Rashi, wrote what's not really a Perush to the Torah. It was a translation of the Torah. Okay? A translation is often a perush. I think, remember I gave you an example? What's a tzfardeya? Saji says it's a crocodile. Rashi says it's a frog. Okay? Why would Saji go and go there and say... So the answer I would have to give you if you put, you know, press me for it, is that in Tehillim there are three chapters that review the 10 plagues, 78, 105, 106. In two of those chapters, it describes Tzfardeya as causing a hashchasa. Hashchata, meaning like a destruction. I wouldn't call what frogs do hashchasa. And Paro, after when the frogs came, said, please save me from this death, this mavis. Get rid of it. Whatever you can imagine how bad the frogs could be, I don't know if I would call it mavis, but I would call it crocodiles coming up by the hundreds up ashore, hashchasa in the mavis. Okay, maybe that's what God said. Okay, when we have to push comes to shove and we have to make up our minds, right? I'm going to get, before Bereshit starts, I'm going to give everyone in this class a gift. I just came out last year with a Perush to Sefer Bereshit, and every parasha has 10 Divrei Torah for different parts of your life, like a marriage Dvar Torah, a bris Dvar Torah, a mitzvah Dvar Torah, and different kinds of things like that. And the last section in each chapter is a strange word that appears in that parasha, and then I analyze the words. So for Parshas Vayera, I did Tzfardeya. Can you feel, that doesn't look like a Hebrew word. What is it? What? I think it's an Aramaic word. Okay, try to break it down as best you can. Now break it down. It breaks down. No? This means to know. Okay, this is, in Hebrew, it's probably a more familiar word, but I think that Hebrew word is related to an Aramaic word. What is that? What's the first three words? First three letters, no? You don't know a Hebrew word that sounds like that? That's with a samach. No. Bird, no? Tzipora?
Oh, Tzipora.
So I think a bird is called a tzipor because they tweet in the morning. You ever wake up to tweeting birds? Especially in the morning. Tzafra in Aramaic means morning. Tzafra tava. Tzafra means morning. I think a tzfardea was called that because they croak all night and they stop in the morning. You get it? Tzfardea. He knows the morning. So I think the etymology of the word points more to frog than to... what do you do with those tzukim and tehillim that seem to say that the frogs brought death and destruction? Use your imagination. Okay, you got me? So the first thing you have to do when you want to do pshat, when these guys are writing, starting to write commentaries, is what do the words mean? Okay, let's string together a whole series of words. I asked you I put you on the spot. What does the word bereshis mean? Bereshis. Huh? That's barishona. What does bereshis mean? What? No, in the beginning of. Bereshis is a construct. Bereshis mamlachas Yehoyakim. In the beginning of the kingdom of Yehoyakim. You get it? Okay, the Torah uses words that sometimes you look at it and you say, you know, this should have been a different word. So someone like Ibn Ezra, who's not such a close reader, someone like Rashbam, who's not such a close reader, say, calm down, it's just all right. Bereshis, Bereshon, no, it's the same thing. I'll find another place where a word like that, it's this construct, but it reads like it's not a construct. And there are places. That's what Ibn Ezra spends most of his time in his first parish, Al HaTorah, doing. Do you know what I mean by a construct? It means something of something. Say for Sheli, gracious shell something, the beginning of something. Beginning of what? The beginning of creation. God created heaven and earth. But that word creation is not in the Pasuk. Right? That's okay. So what Rashi had before him was the Talmud Bavli, the Talmud Yerushalmi, and especially Targumim. Okay? Please don't ever make this mistake. The Targum to the Torah is Unkelus. Targum to Nevi'im is not. Don't say Targum Unkelus to Yahushua. The Targum to Nevi'im is Yonasan ben Uziel. Okay, got that? Yonasan ben Uziel. Some Mikros Gedolos have Yonasan ben Uziel to the Torah, too. Okay. It's not. It's not Yonasan ben Uziel. It should be Targum Yerushalmi. See on this page. And okay. I don't want to, this is a little confusing, but Targum Onkelos is written in Babylonian Aramaic. Yonasan is written in Yerushalmi Aramaic. They're very different. Okay, if you spoke Aramaic in the 2nd century CE in Israel, it's like a different language than Aramaic in Babel. Okay, much, much different than, let's say, English in America and English in Australia. Right? It would be more like English in America in the year 2022 and English in England in the year 1722. It's like almost like a different language. Okay? Got it? So, Targumim to the Torah that looked like they were written with Yerushalmi Aramaic, got it, were called Targum Yerushalmi. Right? And apparently this is what the scholars say, is that someone once wrote this at the top of a page, right? And someone mistakenly read it as Targum Yonasan to the Torah, when it should be read Targum Yerushalmi. There are about 10 different Targum Yerushalmis to the Torah. I'm putting it out there. This is what I'm just. Okay. So Rashi had the Talmud Bavli in front of him, but he didn't comment on the Yerushalmi. He cites the Yerushalmi sometimes. He did not comment on it. We often think of Rashi's contribution to the study of the Gemara, that he wrote a comment to all the Gemaras. Much more than that. He told us what the right words of the Gemara is supposed to be. Because he did not do that to the Yerushalmi, every page of the Yerushalmi usually has 10 or 12 words where someone on the side says, this is not the right word. It should be a different word. Someone made a mistake. Someone copied it. So Rashi would have fixed that. Right? So what I'd like to do now is to give you a few exercises. Okay? Put on your thinking caps. Think philology, think grammar, think everything you need. Okay? And then this is how Rashi used the Talmud. Okay? And Midrashim, to be sure. Like Shrava, Midrashim, Puma, we discussed last class. Okay? Let's see, I'll put down a few examples. Let me give you. Okay. Ready? When Yitzchak wants to give a blessing to Yaakov, to Esav, the Bible says, "Vayehi ki zaken Yitzchak." Vatichena enav meraos. When Yitzchak was old, his eyes grew dim from seeing. Okay. This is to give us a little foreshadowing to explain how was Yaakov able to go in there and make his father think he was Esau. Couldn't he just look at him and see this is not Yaakov, this is not Esau? No, because he couldn't see. Yaakov had to take care of some other senses, like he might feel my arms, he might smell me, right? He's going to taste the food I bring him. Right? That's a little bit of a pella, because Yaakov asked for venison. So Yitzchak asked for venison, tzudalitzayin, which is deer, and he brought in goat meat. I guess if you put in enough curry, maybe they can make them stay taste the same. All right? But anybody remember what Rashi says about this? So ring a bell, vatichena einav meraos. Yitzchak's eyes were dim. Let's see.
He's lying.
What does Rashi write on that question?
He's lying.
He writes why, how he became blind. Remember? What is it?
I don't think I'm making this up, but I don't know where I've heard it from. Something about like tears that like helped his eye from the malachim.
From the malachim.
Okay.
Right. Tears of the malachim from the Akedah. Or, remember the other one? Rashi writes, Oshnon Shel Elu. The incense and the smoke of Esav's wives, they burnt incense to Avodah Zarah. Where did Rashi get that? It's also in the Medrash. Well, you know, the hint is, one of his wives' names was Bosmas. Bosmas, and Besamim in Hebrew means incense. Ah, okay. Oshnon Shel Elu. And another point is that the pasuk right before this pasuk describes Esav's marriage to these two women, Machlas and Bosmas. Batian Boris Ruach, Yitzchak and Rivka, Ayiki's opinion, Yitzchak Batim. So, what made Rashi feel the need to tell us how Yitzchak got blind? Look at the seven words I wrote at the top in Talmud. What makes Rashi care enough to tell us how Yitzchak? It's obvious to the reader that the Bible doesn't care about how he became blind. It just wants to tell us that he was blind to explain how Yaakov pulled this off. So make sure that the answer you give me now fits one of these seven words. Go ahead. Yes?
Why
I was gonna say, well, if he wasn't blind and this one just pulled it off, then maybe he would have said he's crazy. Because, like, he'd be like, he wasn't in the full mental faculty.
Listen, you're going one step ahead. That may be something for a drash to write. But you're here writing the commentary. And you want to comment on these words. Isn't it enough to just say, we're told this to explain how Yaakov was able to do what he did?
But you could be old and see.
Isn't what's screaming out at you in these words that says that you have to know how he became blind? The Pasuk says, right? You know, some people in Tanakh who got blind when they were old, it says Eli was blind, he was 98. It says Yaakov kavdu einav mizoken. Right? Old people tend to go blind. Alright, so what's the chop here? What's bothering you, Rashi? Go ahead, yes.
I'm guessing, I don't know grammar rules.
Don't guess. Look at the words and tell me. Translate them. When Yitzchak grew old, his eyes grew dim from seeing. What's rushing out at you in these words? Now, this is an important point. When Rashi comments on the Bible, he wants to make use of every word. Nothing extra. Rishpam and Ibn Ezra say there's lots of extra verbiage in the Bible. The Bible is flowery. The Bible uses extra words. There's biblical parallelism. The Bible repeats itself sometimes. What is bothering Rashi here?
Are you reading
this
when he became old, or because he became old, his eyes
grew dim? Then, if Rashi felt that the top line was telling us why he was blind, then he wouldn't have written anything. So, but what might be written on the second line? Yes, please.
Maybe it's repetitive
because
it's saying he's old and
he
then became blind.
Not all men are blind.
He could have just said he became blind.
No, not all men are blind. Tell me something on the second line, yes.
It says a name grows, like, from seeing.
Right, that's what the commentaries to Rashi say. Well, the whole word is extra. You see, Rashi does not want this to mean the same as that. What's this, his eyes grew dim from seeing? Just say his eyes grew dim. That's a tanei nov. I wouldn't be missing anything. But do you see that you really chopped it? His eyes grew dim from seeing.
He saw too much.
The tears of the angels. It could have been his eyes grew dim because he looked at a total eclipse of the sun. Maybe he looked at the Kohanim when they were duchening. That's not the issue. The Pasuk is saying his eyes grew dim from seeing something. You get it now? You get it that Rashi is now utilizing this. This word is not an extra word now. You hear it? Does everybody here feel comfortable being able to, if I ask you next class, all right, what is it in this pasuk that Rashi sees to say these, like, unnecessary points? What is it? What is it in that pasuk that makes you feel you have to tell us how he became one? Okay, got it? The extra word for yours. Yes.
That extra word would mean that you have to see, like, why you became blind. It still says why.
It
just goes
to
why I have the extra word.
Cross out this word. Right? It would mean the same. Yitzchak was old, his eyes grew dim. Yitzchak was old, his eyes grew dim from seeing. What did you add for me with that word, from seeing?
So
you think his eyes grew dim from smelling? What? I'm sorry?
So it's saying from
seeing what? From seeing, yeah. From seeing something. So that Rashi looked in, Rashi would never make it up. If Rashi had to make it up, he might say, I don't know why the Torah says Meros. Maybe he looked at a total eclipse of the sun once and his eye, and he lost his eyesight. But the Bible doesn't care to tell me odd information like that.
It isn't.
So
I think if you go with any of the answers, because the tears fell in his eyes, and that's not from seeing the tears,
Now you can get into the deeper meaning of what this medrash means. I'm just interested now in why Rashi chose to record something that's not pshat. This is not pshat. Pshat is, he came old from old age. He became blind from old age. Right? That's the pshat. But the drash asks, why did you give me this extra word? That's Rashi's contribution. That's what made it so popular, by the way. Because everyone likes to, you know, what is this word doing here? So I'm going to give you another exercise on the board now. Paro gave a command to midwives to kill Jewish babies, Jewish boys if they're born. It's a girl, that'll live. It's a boy, choke him, and then say, oh, look at that, the baby's not breathing. Right? And they appointed two specific women, and they're named, right? Shifra and Pua. Got it? I'm going to write the Bible's description of their rebellion. It says, V'lo shamu ka'asher diber aleihen Paro melech Mitzrayim v'techayena es hayilodim. They did not listen to the command of Paro, the king of Egypt. So the English translations that you'll find read, they let the boys live. Did he kill the boys? The command was to kill boys, but they let them live. It's not good for Rashi. Rashi on Vatzachayin Sayyaladin writes, Misafkot Lohen Mayim Umazon. That these midwives got for the new mothers and their babies, they got them water, they got them food, they took care of them. So the Mefarshim asked, Rashi, where does it say here? It says they let them live. Where are you getting that they actually gave them food? Yes.
I feel like it's been repeated to say that they didn't listen to the decree and they let them live. So to let them live is like...
What was the decree?
I mean, it's to kill them. So obviously, if they don't listen, they're letting them live. So what is this actually...
Right, so it's the same kind of question, you see? If this was not in the pasuk, wouldn't I know from the top line that they let them live? Because the command was to kill them. So if they didn't listen to that command, I know that they live. So if you're telling me new information, right, it must be that it's telling me something new, something else. Not just reiterating what's already there. You get it? I take this opportunity to introduce to you a concept, I'll call it in English, it's called biblical parallelism. In Hebrew, it's known as tikbolet, or I'm now using the terminology coined by Rashbam. You see, it's kefel ha'inyan b'milim shonot. Kefel ha'inyan, saying the same, you know, kefel means double, right? The same concept, using different words. We do this in speeches. Do this in presentations. Sometimes you say it twice, sometimes you say it three times. Right? Okay. Examples of this abound. Okay. God tells Rivka, Shnei goyim bividneich. Shnei le'umim mime'ayich yiparedu. Usually when we see biblical parallelism, it's used in poetic statements. God is telling, you remember who's hearing these words? There are two nations inside of you. Two countries, two nations will depart from your loins. Who's being told? Rivka. This is God talking to Rivka. Okay. Did this second line add anything that she didn't know from the first line? Right?
the first one is nations and...
Maybe just another word for nation.
Okay.
Countries. We'll call the United Nations. I'll give you the exercise now. I'll give you a famous lesson. Ve'otzar es ha-shamayim. Ve'lo yihyeh matar. Ve'otzar es ha-shamayim. Ve'lo yihyeh matar. Right? What is matar? Rain. Tal is new. Okay, Ve'otzar means to stop. I'll stop up the heavens, and there won't be any rain. Now that seems to be a flowing statement. I'll stop up the heavens. How? By denying you rain. Right? Rashi says no. Ve'otzar es ha-shamayim means there won't be snow, there won't be hail, there won't be wind, there won't be clouds, things that are up in the shamayim. Because if the top line means there won't be rain, then in effect, what is this pasuk saying? If the top line means there won't be rain, what is this pasuk saying? Yeah? There won't be rain, there won't be rain. Why are you doing that? Following? If your tzara is a shemayim, means there won't be rain. You with me? Then the pasuk is just repetitive. So Rashbam and Radak look at that and say, so what? There are thousands of pasukim in Tanakh that are just repetitive. Right? Hazinu Hashemayim Badaber V'Sishma Ha'aretzim Refi. That's not repetitive. That's Shira. Songs are repetitive. Music is repetitive. Any musicians here? Play the first few notes, the first bar of Moonlight Sonata. The second bar is going to sound very similar. Right? Until it goes off a little bit afterwards. Okay? So what's wrong with the Bible talking that way? Welcome to Rashi's world. Rashi does not like repetition in the Bible. Okay? Now, Rashi, you can't help but notice that there are lots of things repeated in the Bible. So we're going to have something to say about that. Maybe next week. Okay. You see the two exercises I just gave you? Right? Because if this means they let the boys live, then the Bible is just repeating itself. They didn't listen to Paro. Right? What does that mean? They let the boys live. So what do you have to tell me again what I already know? Don't tell me what I already know. And if you're telling me what I seem to already know, that second statement must be telling me something different. Something new. Okay, clear?
Would it be the other way around, that like, the first statement is possibly saying?
Yes, sometimes you could be reinterpreting the first statement. Correct. Yeah, let's see Rashi does that.
So what was the rain?
It's just that in this case, this one is a little nebulous. I don't know what stopping up the heavens mean. This is very clear. Well, not Matara.
So there's only a spiritual stopping of the heavens?
Like, could be. It's on the table for Rashi sometimes. But in this case, it happens to be a Gemara, and this has time, so Rashi just copied off the Gemara. Okay, so I was trying to hail, snow, wind, rain, the other things that fall off on the head. That will be stopped. Okay? Now sometimes you need help. You need help from commentaries to Rashi. Right? When Avram's servant went to look for a wife for Yitzchak, right? Remember he made a deal with God about who to choose? Whom to choose?
Mm-hmm.
So, it says that he ran right to Rivka. Rashi says because he saw water rising out of the well into a pail. Rashi writes that regarding four people of the Bible. Yaakov and Parshas Vayetzeh. Avraham and Parshas Lech Lecha, Moshe and Parshas Shmos, and Rivka and Parshas Chayisara. Rashi, what are you doing? How does it do this? It's all in Bereishis Rabbah and Shmos Rabbah. Fine, but Rashi, you're not Medrash. You're not just a parrot of the Midrash to copy down the Drushan you like, right? Ibn Ezra was very critical of Rashi for this. He says, Rashi is writing for five-year-olds. He's writing for children who are still nursing, he says, to keep the Bible interesting. Rashi's own grandson, Rashbam, was very critical of Rashi for writing a lot of these things. But you know what? I can't say they didn't understand Rashi. I'm not going to say that I understand Rashi better than Rashbam. Rashbam knew Rashi. Rashbam was Rashi's grandson. And Rashi makes the incredibly amazing statement Rashbam makes the incredibly amazing statement in Parshas Vayeshev. He says, I studied Chumash with my grandfather. Get this, hold on to your seats. And he agreed with me that had he been younger, he would have to redo his Pemush to be Mokshat. Because of the new ways that Kedushim HaMishchachos B'chol Yom. Rashbam was only 16 when Rashi died. He was Rabbeinu Tam's older brother. Got it? Okay? So, we might have to spend a few classes figuring out what was, if Rashbam is telling the truth, and I can't believe he would lie about that. What did he mean? How did this 16-year-old enlighten his grandfather? I can't believe that I can read Rashi better than Rashbam did. Rashbam knew Rashi. What they did was they disagreed sharply about something. They disagreed over whether these kind of perushim about water rising out of a well, which one of the four on the board does it contradict reality? It's not reality. Water doesn't do that. So what made Rashi write it? Because it was in the Midrash? Not enough. And this is why sometimes you need commentaries to Rashi. In all four of those people, when they go to a well to get water, I said Avram, it's not Avram, it's Yitzchak. It's Yitzchak, Yaakov, Rivka, and Moshe. In all four of those stories, when they go to a well to get water, right, it describes other people at that place getting water through this action, usually sha'av. Sometimes a little bit sha'av. The act of sha'av is to take a pail with a rope tied around it, usually in two places. You have something heavy in the pail, so that when it drops into the water, that heaviness will make it dip into the water, right? The pail will dip to the point where water fills, breaks the plane of the top of the pail, and then it fills with water, and then you bring it up with a pull. That's called lishov mayim. When Rivka goes to the well, it says that the benos haaretz were shoavos mayim. Everybody, all the other people at the well that day had to shin aleph bet to get water. But when it says that Avram's servant went to Rivka, it does not use that word. It just says v'tamaleyes kadol. She was Harry Potter with a wand, right? But Timaleas Kadov means I don't have to shin out of faith. Why not? Because I could just get water myself. Okay. Well, the way I read Rashi, I have to go much further than this to get a good interpretation of what drove Rashi to say this. He knows it's not reality. He knows his grandson has already argued with him over why you're putting that. That's good. That's good for Medrash. And it's good for the little Medrash says and to read to your child embedded for a four-year-old child in Parshas Chayesara. But don't write that in a perush that you claim is pshat. Rashi keeps telling us, Anilo Basiel of Shuto Shamikra, don't brag that you're pshat and then you write stuff like that. Right? I think what Rashi's doing is that he's trying to tell us, and this is how I read Rashi, trying to tell us an important message about how to choose a spouse. Avram's servant sees someone performing miracles, right? Before he tried his test, you know what I'm saying? Involving his camels in the water. He saw someone performing miracles, and yet he went through with his test. Why? She's obvious. She's momentous beneficent. She's miraculous. She's got everything I'm looking for. Right? That's the metaphor. Go on a date with someone, it's a first date, and he's got every single vision I have for the future he shares. And he's good looking, and he's loaded, and he likes me. It's not a shidduch until you check for chesed. Check to make sure that he didn't snap at a waiter when he didn't get what he wanted, or he has patience with. If it's not a shidduch, if she's not a balas chesed, Eliezer says, he almost lost himself. He was going to give her the gifts right away, the Mefer says, when he saw the water miraculously rocking going into it. But no way, that's not enough reason enough for me to choose her for Yitzchak. I've got a test to see that she's a Balas Chesed. Is she going to give me water? And water for camel, that's a lot of water. Right? Okay, I think that's a deeper meaning in Rashi. Okay? If you read Rashi like that the rest of your lives, you will have a great gift of finding deeper meaning in Rashi. Which Midrashim does he care to cite? Okay, are you with me? So if I didn't have the Perushim to Rashi, I don't know, why did he say the water rises out of the well? Because he ran to her? That's circular reasoning. The original question is, he should have called out from the well, who has water for a thirsty stranger? And let 7 or 8 girls come up and offer him. And the first one, instead he didn't give anybody else that day a chance. He ran straight to that one. Keep this to be a harsher question, please. Yes?
What if she was just smart? That the reason the water raised is because she had a technique to bring it up. So first she was intelligent and then she was kind.
Okay, Rashi, when Rashi brings such a perush like this, it has to have some takeaway. It's not the way of Rashi to say, especially since at this time such a thing didn't exist, right? Is that they had some kind of, like in Star Trek, where you can make certain molecules move from here to there, and she knew how to do that with water. It's not that, That's something why she hasn't experienced, so it's not going to write that.
No, maybe she had a way of, when you take it out, it's just going to jump at you. I don't know how, but maybe she had a technique.
All right. Anyway, Rashi's first goal there is to explain why did he run straight to Rivka. When it says he saw a whole countryside of women bringing up water, and he just went straight to the first one, to Rivka. So Rashi wants to find one. There must be something special. What can I find in the text itself that might indicate how special she was? Her height? Her looks? Anything else? It's the narrator who says, who talks about her. I don't know if Eliezer recognized those things. Okay? Clear? Right? We're going to see many, many examples of this over time, right? Suffice it to say that when Ibn Ezra was about 50 years younger than Rashi, Rashbam was about the same. Ibn Ezra and Rashbam were born a few years apart, okay? Ibn Ezra was well aware of Rashi's commentary, but Ibn Ezra was Sephardi, Rashi was Ashkenazi. At the time Rashi lived, Rashi was born in 1040. The Sephardim felt very aloof of the Ashkenazi. The Sephardim were exposed to Islamic philosophy, Arabic, and therefore better at grammar, because Arabic is a Semitic language very similar to Hebrew. The Ashkenazim had nothing to be gained from their Christian counterparts, and they were under considerable persecution, as opposed to the Jews who lived in Sephardic lands, who were able to thrive. You hear it? So the Sephardim were like in the more of an age of enlightenment, if you will. Not that life was wonderful under the Muslims, but it was certainly better than under Christendom. Okay. I want to close out today by just saying that Rashi had the utmost respect for the Gemara and the Targumim, but it doesn't mean that he just parroted whatever the Gemara said. If Rashi felt that the Gemara, not a question of pshat, but that the Gemara does not capture the essential point of the actual words before him, then he's not going to cite it. I'll give you a very quick example here. Okay. Let's try to figure it out. Mina Mar. Vayelach Ish Mibeit Levi. Vayikach Et Bat Levi. Vatahar Ha'isha. Vatelet Ben. Vatitz Penehu Shlosha Yerufim. Who are we talking about here? Yes?
Like very
emotional parents. Right. Moshe's parents. Okay? The man from the house of Levi named Amram took the actual daughter of Levi, Yocheved, who was the daughter of Levi, and she conceived, and she gave birth to a child, and she hid him for 3 months. Why did she have to hide him? Because of Pharaoh's decree, killing all the boys that we just made reference to before. Okay? Now, one of the things that if you're writing a commentary, you're wondering a few things. One, why don't you tell me the names of the parents? Right? Something that should bother you is that you find out you know this, because you may just mentioned it, that this boy has an older brother and an older sister. At least an older sister that shows up in this story. Right? She goes and protects him. Why isn't her birth mentioned here? Right? If this is they got married, so tell me about the older siblings. Right? Did you hear what's the famous Medrash's answer to this question? That they split up, and this is their remarriage. You get it? You've heard of such a thing? Rashi mentions that. Okay? But what I want to concentrate on here is, why does it tell me how long she was able to hide? Just say she hid him as long as she could, and when she no longer could, again, you see too much information here. Ooh, that's Rashi. You know that Rashi that says he was born early? Is not found anywhere in rabbinic literature. Right? What percentage of Rashi do you think is nothing but an opinion in the Gemara or a Targum or a Medrash? Give me an educated percentage. This is easily check it out. There are books just dedicated to this alone to tell you where did Rashi get this. What percentage of Rashi is a Gemara, a Targum, or a Medrash?
80?
No. 65? Anybody else? The correct answer is somewhere between 99.5 and 99.7. Practically every single Rashi on the Torah has a source. And when it doesn't have a source, he says, Ani Omer. He tells you, this is my opinion. Okay, then you're going to say, what's Rashi's contribution? It's to give the pshat to the... what did you see in the pasuk to write this source? Okay? Rashi chooses to say that she could hide him for 3 months because it says that he was born 3 months early. That's how they were... She was able to hide him at that point. The Egyptians went around and estimated... They didn't kill the pregnant women because maybe she'll have a boy. A girl. So they waited to estimate when she thinks she's going to give birth. She gave birth 3 months early, and that's how she was able to hide. This goes against the Gemara in the Maseches Sota that says that when he took her back, she was already 3 months pregnant. You get it? Whenever someone got married, she was pregnant because from when they were still met, they were separated for 3 months. She was pregnant before they split. He didn't know that. But when they remarried 3 months later, she gave birth to a full-term baby 6 months from then. The Egyptians counted from the remarriage, and she knew she had 3 months before they would be able to come pound down the door and see if there's a baby crying someplace. You got it? Here? Why did Rashi reject the Gemara's answer? The Gemara says that she was 3 months pregnant before this marriage. Look at the board and tell me what. I'm using this as an example of that Rashi will use the Gemara, he'll use the Midrashim, but only to the extent where it fits the meaning of the words. Show me the one word that made Rashi say this. Yes. Batar, of course. Every woman conceives before they give birth, but not the Bible doesn't always tell us that. If the word Batar wasn't here, Bekafis Bas Levi, Batelet Ha'isha Bein, then I think Rashi would have quoted the Gemara. If it had said Batelet Bein, then yes, Rashi would have said, how was she able to hide him for 3 months? Why am I told that information? The answer is, because she was 3 months pregnant at the time of this marriage. So she had 3 months to hide the baby. Rashi would have said the Gemara, but you can't say that here, because Batar is too strange to say the Batar happened here, before this remarriage. That's too strange. Following? I know, ain't Mukhtama Mu'ucha, but that's too strange to say. So that's okay for Medrash Precious Shmos Rabba, but it's not okay for my Perish. My Perish still has to fit philology, grammar, sometimes it doesn't fit reality, but okay. Rashi was much greater point for Rashi was to fit the meaning of the words in the pasuk. Okay. I hope that you. I'm going to give you some more exercises in the beginning of the next class. Okay. I'm sorry about the Zoom fiasco that happened last time, but this time we will be really good. Okay. And I'm going to give you something that you can listen to through leisure. For that one. Sorry for that situation. All right, so have a great Shabbos, everybody.
Thank you.